And great reaction to the O'Neill sisters and their singing. Sean, it's well for you listening live to lovely live singing, says Brendan. Yeah, absolutely true. It is too. But we shared it with our 320,000 listeners as well. And we hope to have them back at some stage, no doubt, into the future. Now, if we were to ask listeners to text in what they expect to have for their Christmas dinner, I'm sure turkey and ham, spiced beef, goose or maybe duck would come close to the top of the list. And for the non-meat eater, options like nut roast or mushroom Wellington could well feature. But what if you want something a little different this year? Are there certain Christmas dishes associated with different parts of the country? Well, our regular contributor and chef extraordinaire, JP McMahon from Anir in Galway, is with me again. JP, we're not going to talk turkey. So even though Christmas wouldn't be Christmas without the turkey. So what are the, are there traditions, regional traditions that people might look to by way of alternatives?
I think it's interesting considering that the turkey one, which we're not supposed to be talking about, is relatively new in the last couple of hundred years. And before that, as you mentioned, with goose, lamb as well, I think was also something. And beef as well, roast beef. I mean, Cork has its spiced beef, which doesn't seem to migrate too much up into the other parts of the country. But I mean, I know the Cork people speak highly of their spiced beef.
And everything else that comes out of Cork as
well. That is true. That is true as well. But there's also, fish at Christmas, which is something that we never really think about. And it's something the other Mediterranean countries have, spent a lot of time on, is cooking whole fish, particularly the Spanish. Remember the Spanish Christmas Eve, and but also their little Christmas as well. They have a roast fish in that. And so considering we have so much fish around the country, yeah, you'd hope that we have some type of tradition.
Yeah, we will talk a little bit about turkey in a minute or two, but what was the food mainstay before turkey became popular?
Goose would have been the absolute mainstay for a couple of hundred years, and it's really interesting the way they would have cooked it is put it in a cast iron pot and cook it over the fire with liquid in it, and then take it out and kind of roast it off to finish it. Always over with a little bit of turf, so I'd say it was quite a turf smoked turkey. I'd say it would have been
turf smoked goose.
I'm saying turkey as well, and with a potato stuffing, but that would have been very very traditional. But I think what happened with the turkey is the size of it, and people had large families, and we had to, I suppose, feed large families. And particularly, I mean, I was from a family of six, but I think before that there were 10, and maybe before that there were 18, and if you go back the generations. So goose has a very big carcass.
I remember hearing Danny Lynch of GA and Board of Works fame talking about, in a big family, you know, the smallest person would get the bishop's nose. That would be on a chicken. That's sort of the pointy thing on the head.
Stop. And,
if you were lucky, I mean, a big family. But in any event, I suppose, you know, the fact that there isn't a whole lot of meat on a goose, is that the reason it would have slipped in popularity and then the turkey kind of took over?
I think so as well. And also I think is that turkey became quite popular among, I suppose, everyone, and goose became a little bit of a privileged thing because it was smaller and was probably more expensive. Even still today, this day, if you need to feed 8 people, I mean, a goose isn't going to give you as much back. It has it's a very fatty bird, even though the meat itself is quite lean. You'd nearly need a goose twice the size to feed the same amount of people because you're getting about 50%.
But I gather, JP, you would like to see more families experimenting with fish and shellfish over Christmas. You're a fan of an option like a big roast turbot, which could feed up to 6 people.
Absolutely, and about 20 minutes in the oven, no
That'd
stress.
That'd be one hell of a fish, though, wouldn't it?
But 3 kilo fish, like, well, it's not too big. Like, I suppose for me, that'd be an average size fish. But like, you can get 2 small ones, but you can get sea bream or John Dory. I think that we always think about, I suppose, we always cook what our parents cooked, and I still cook turkey and ham because I'm not allowed to cook anything else in our house. If I suggested doing something else, but I do think we have a little Christmas tradition in Tartar. We have a little seafood Christmas, and we try and talk about it at least because it is the best time of the year to be eating shellfish.
Well, on that point, I mean, I think some people might be a bit wary of cooking mussels and oysters, just in terms of getting them right. Now, you don't have to cook oysters. I mean,
no,
you
absolutely,
eat them the shell. But some people will. You can have hot oysters.
You can put them under the grill and put a knob of butter in them, and that you could even, they'll even pop open. You don't even need to open them. You just put them in a warm oven and they'll pop. And then
really?
You just,
so you don't have to get all this business of putting nothing. A tea towel around them and, you know, sort of getting a sharp knife.
If you have slightly bigger oysters.
Pretend you're in Clarenbridge.
If you have slightly bigger oysters, you can just pop them in a 180 degree oven, 2 or 3 minutes, and they'll pop. And then you just put your little dressing on them wherever. But mussels take, I mean, they're a fast food, like a minute. A little bit of oil, butter, onions in the pan, a little bit of liquid cider, and then throw your mussels in, cover them, steam them, and it's 2 minutes.
We're really talking starters here, obviously.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah. Unless you want to get 10 kilos of mussels for the family, get the kids to pick them out for you.
Yeah, and you also recommend something I wouldn't normally have associated with Christmas, beef ribs.
The roast of the, not the actual kind of Jacob's ladder, but the actual roast beef on the rib. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a kind of classic English thing to have. And I do think it's a really nice thing to have is a kind of three-boned rib roast. And then you can cook that medium rare or whatever way you like. But it will probably take the pressure off you a little bit because you won't have to be waiting 3 or 4 hours for your turkey, because the turkey is probably the biggest thing most people will cook.
Now, you have a novel suggestion for cooking celeriac, which you say is very popular. You bake it in hay. Tell me more.
Hay is a great flavour enhancer. And people, when I speak to vegetarians about this, they kind of give me funny looks. But hay is dried grass and it has a kind of smoky, natural flavour. So we wrap the celeriac in hay, and then we wrap it in cling film and tinfoil, and then bake it for about 45 minutes to an hour. And when you open it up, you get this lovely, smoky, earthy smell. Even as an accompaniment to anything. And you can do it with a turnip as well. And it's really...
I mean, like, I said to somebody last week in the programme that, sure, celeriac is just like a hairy turnip, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. I love celeriac. And pureed in chips, roasted. Celeriac is I think, my favourite vegetable from this time of year.
So you bring the whole thing, you say, well, obviously you'll give it a bit of a wash.
You don't need to peel it. Just give it a wash, because there are roots. Chop the bottom off it to make it stand up. And then wrap it in hay, wrap it in cling film, and wrap it in tinfoil.
How much hay?
Like a nice handful. I think it's about 140 grams, but it's not that much. The pet shop is a good place to find hay.
Okay, and the other one that I see on your list, salt baked beetroot,
which is another great way of like. What you do with what happens with the hay when wrapping it is that you're keeping in moisture. So you mix salt with some egg white and go for an inexpensive rock salt, and then literally cover your beetroot with the salt and then bake them in the oven. And the outside will become hard. It's a typical thing for way for cooking fish. And then crack them open and you'll have these gorgeous beetroots, and they'll be nice with drizzled with goat's cheese or sour cream or loads of leaves or nuts, walnuts or hazelnuts or anything like that.
I know you've told us this before, but for people who may not remember, both you and your wife were vegetarians for about 7 or so years. What did you eat at Christmas during that time?
A lot of nut loaves. I couldn't remember why I became vegetarian. I think it was because I was an angsty teenager, and I was probably 15 or 16. And I remember reading an article. I'd love to know who wrote the article. It was in the Sunday Times or something. And it was about a woman who had decided she couldn't remember why she was vegetarian, so she stopped. And that was the beginning of my downfall. I was about 23 or 24. And I just said, maybe I'll go back to meat. But it still influences. I love vegetables. I love cooking them. And it has given me a better attitude towards vegetables, and also to meat as well.
It's funny what you can do with things like cauliflower and what do you call that one George Bush used to like, as George Bush Senior? The green thing. Anyway, it looks a bit like cauliflower.
They're not sprouting broccoli or no.
Broccoli, the very one. Yeah. Okay, listen, we leave it there. Thanks, Niamh, for coming in.
No worries at all, John.
JP McMahon, chef extraordinaire. Thank you so much.